Three friends.
Three cities.
One question.
How can we turn this world around?
You're on with Earth Friends.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
So on today's episode, our title is The Circle of Life and the Economy, featuring Dana. How do you say your last name? I'm so sorry. I want to say
Dana Siang-hyo. Yeah, that's a hard last name. It's tough.
Dana is one of my close friends from the Philippines, who is now currently in Paris, France. Back when she was in the Philippines, she was working as the product manager of GCash Forest. So GCash is a fintech company in the Philippines that allows for online transactions. And she is now taking up Masters of Science in Sustainability in ESCP Business School Paris. Welcome. I'm so glad to have you here on the show.
Hey, thanks, Carrie, for letting me join in. I don't know. I just found it very interesting that you invited me, and I was like, man, I don't know. I'm just 25. I really don't know much. But if I can help spread the news and make sustainability the mainstream in any way possible and get more people on the boat, I don't mind doing so. So
we're all kind of all in the same boat, trying to learn more and make it, as you said, more of the norm rather than something to adapt. But speaking of sustainability, we'd like to open our podcast by asking all our guests, what has impacted you this week?
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. I think for me, what's impacted me was we had a discussion in class all about like imperialism within sustainability as a field. And, you know, you don't think about like the effect of colonialism and imperialism on sustainability. But if you think about it, all of these countries in the West are saying like, hey, I want to achieve this percent of, or like this amount of decrease of carbon emissions, or I want to hit carbon net zero, you know, zero emissions. But then when that happens, business as usual still has to continue, right? So then who carries the load? Who has to make it happen, make business still happen? It will obviously be the developing countries. So it was just an interesting perspective of things. Like, I didn't think that even in colonial, like even within sustainability, colonialism still exists, but that's life. And we still have to make the most of the situation. And yeah, that's a bit heavy as a, something that struck me this week, but it's a reality.
That's quite interesting. So it's like they're offloading their carbon footprint to another part of the world. Did I get that right?
In essence, like you know, like with the COP, like the COP26, COP21, the Paris Agreement, all of these countries in the West can make these very ambitious goals. But when they make these very ambitious goals, things still have to continue as is, like BAU, business as usual for companies still have to happen. So then who has to carry that, or who has to manage that? Then it will be the developing countries, therefore limiting the amount or the level of goals and ambitiousness that developing countries may have. I hope that makes a bit more sense. Like, it's just interesting because even in terms of like sustainability, we as a developing countries are limited in that sense. Like, we can't 100%. Make goals as ambitious just because other companies or countries are pushing for them more and they have sort of control over us economically. And now I guess in terms of like sustainability. So it's just a very strange, like when my prof said it, I just went, oh my god, it's right. Like, I never viewed it that way.
No, and I think coming, like you were mentioning earlier, that you're only four students from the developing country in your program. I think, like, we were talking about this with one of our other guests, Tara Santos, and she was saying how access to sustainability has to be considered into it, because example, going on a vegan diet isn't the same way like in the Philippines, where certain products are not financially feasible for the majority of the population, or even just having to get, let's say, certain produce is one, more expensive, and two, maybe even harder than being able to get access to meat.
100%. Like, that's the thing. Because it one is access, right? But the other is like behavior change. Like, I've told this to so many people in our in the program. Like, how do you expect people in the Philippines to, like, stop using plastic sachets when in reality behavior is just inherently that? Like, we can't think like for tomorrow. We have to think in the day to day. And sachets don't become, like, not because we want to. It's just because we have to, you know? Like, that's just how it is. And that's the thing. Like, I'm still trying to think of ways to counter that. But, like, even if maybe it's not about making the big solutions right away, but the small incremental changes that can help push that forward. And it could be incremental changes in managing the waste. It could be incremental changes in changing the design of, like, the products that are being sold.
Yeah, it seems like you're learning a lot. I'm into it.
I'd like to hope so. It's been 6 months now, but I do feel like I'm a bit of a changed person just because of, like, I don't think I've thought this much, like, in a while, like, really pushed myself to reflect as much as I have in the program than I did, like, while working. You know what I mean? Like, when you're a student, everything becomes a lesson. Like, everything you do, just living, going out on the street, everything becomes an opportunity to learn. Yeah. But then versus, like, when you're at work, it sort of feels like you get into a routine. And yeah, that, it was a nice, definitely, like, break of things. Yeah.
And I also enjoyed working.
Yeah.
So, fun fact about Dana. Dana is a star student in LaSalle, so that's how I knew her.
No.
She was always on her A game, and oh, she was goodness, managing amazing grades on top of being in the choir and theater and whatever else,
but
she's
Carrie
doing.
Was star. The whole time, I'm star. Just saying. So, I love Carrie. She was like my, she's my rock band. She was the humor every day. I'm like, oh my god, I'm stressed. But Carrie's right here. There's no reason to be stressed.
I know, and we got into this whole sustainability train at the same time, I think.
Exactly.
So it's like perfect timing. Yeah. So before you studied in Paris, you were working in Mint for your project for GCash Forest, which allows people to digitally plant trees.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say your sustainability initiatives then centered more on reforestation? And explain to the world how you made GCash Forest grow, because that's my favorite thing on GCash right now.
I'm so glad to hear that. So yeah, I guess Carrie's already explained what GCash is, and it didn't start that way. You know, when I entered GCash, the whole vision was just to make financial services more accessible, you know? But then towards the end of it, maybe around 2 years in, we realized, like, what are there other ways to get people to keep using the app, and is there a way to do it without people being, like, you know, not thinking about themselves, but really wanting to help and give back to the world, or, like, to the country? And in that sense, that same idea of, like, incremental changes. And so that's the whole concept of GCash Forest, is, like, it's just a virtual game wherein every time you use the app, you get points. And as you continuously gain points, you can grow a virtual tree. And once you have enough points for a virtual tree, we plant a real tree. And that's the idea. It is reforestation until now. And the great thing about that is, like, reforestation or planting trees is done for so many reasons, right? It could be for biodiversity, it could be for water access, it could be for air purification. So all these things, like, trees all address that. And I think it's nice to see now, like, I think there are, like, 7 million people on GCash Forest now. And if I'm not mistaken, we have a few more partners now as well. So, like, that was the whole idea as well, is, like, if no one's going to put the money or, like, invest in planting trees, how do we as an institution or as a platform bridge the gap between people who plant trees and companies who maybe want to plant trees, but they just don't know how, and consumers as well. So that's the whole concept of GCash Forest, is one is, of course, planting the trees, but two is really just empowering people and making them realize that the small actions in their day-to-day can make a difference. Yeah. It was all about behavioral change. Like, that's really what it is. And that's why we tried to gamify it, adding avenues to, like, collect from friends, you know, or we say, okay, we
you
never
mean
use
steal.
The word. Yeah, I never use that word. See, I don't even say it. Like,
you know why? My office mates are on a huge competition right now. As in, like, everyone in my office is so competitive. And I'm, like, freaking out because, like, the lead is getting smaller and smaller each day.
Yeah, but you're doing really, like, well, Carrie. I remember you collecting from me. And I was like, damn, getting more than I am. And I'm the product manager. This is a
I was
lot,
committed, huh? Dude. I was committed. Because even walking.
Yes,
because I don't have a lot of transactions. You're right. Like, GCash Forest is the main reason why I open my GCash. Maybe, like, four times a day.
To collect from people talaga.
That's yeah, yeah. To monitor the stats.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's true. Like, even walking is tracked, and it's just about finding ways to change your behavior, right? Like, if you think about it, the whole idea was just to replace the need to go to a Bayad center or the need to, like, pay with and get receipts. Like, those aren't necessary. You can remove all of that from the process and eliminate the waste in the transaction. And okay. So you save, you help the world that way, and you also plant a tree. It was really fun. But that's sort of what brought me to France, or wanting to study sustainability, was like, a model like that has to be replicable. There has to be other models that exist in the world that bring us to that, like, that use tech for good. Like, like, from my perspective, tech is also a very important field. Like, it makes things more accessible. It makes solutions. Like, for me, here in France, there are so many apps that I use that help me figure out, like, how to combat waste in little ways. But I love them. Like, they're all, like, my best friends. I use them every day. It's maybe to either to combat, like, food waste, or just to, like, bike around the city instead of having to take a car or something. Like, they're my best friends.
So you mentioned, like, after working with GCAS for us and, like, realizing that how this whole thing works should be replicable. So what is your definition of circular economy?
Okay, that's a nice question. It's a bit separated, but, like, for me, the definition of circular economy is really just, how do we continue to achieve the same amount of, like to fulfill our needs currently today without sustainability is fulfilling the needs of today without sacrificing the needs of the future generations. But in terms of a circular economy, how we currently consume is literally take, make, dispose. We use it, we get it, and we throw it. We don't think about how to bring it back into a circle or bring it back into a loop. And the whole idea of circular economy is, how do we extend the life cycle of any product that we use? Or if we can't extend it, then how do we minimize the amount of produce that the product that we're trying to use throughout the process, right? So it's, I'd say it's all about reducing waste within, like, the whole supply chain, from, like, the production of the thing to even when you use it to when it's thrown out. Like, if you can, you don't throw anything out, you just put it back into the circle, back into the loop of the supply chain, and reuse it for something else, right? So that's the whole idea of circular economy. And yeah, I love it. But it is separated from GCash Forest. Like, but it still has the same idea of, like, caring for the world. You know, it's the same concept of preserving the world, but not necessarily through like planting, like a solution like that, but through minimizing the waste that's in the world. So yeah.
So would you say that, like, the 7 R's, or reduce, reuse, rot, recycle, all of that is more integrated into circular economy, or is that kind of a antiquated way of thinking? Because I know we were talking about it, and you're saying that, like, recycling is almost kind of useless. I mean, not to discourage anyone from recycling, because you should still definitely do it, but on the scale of how much it actually minimizes environmental damage, it's very, 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 very minimal.
I think just to harp on that, like, to answer that question, the thing about the circular economy is that it doesn't think about the end of life as the first step. We have to move all the way back to just the design itself as the first step of eliminating waste. So even in the creation of, like, the design of a product, like I said, sachets, we can't just think about how do we collect the sachets and recycle them. We have to look back and think about how do we design sachets so that they can actually be biodegradable, or compostable, actually is the better word, compostable within, like, 50 years versus, like, they say as biodegradable, which actually could be like 200 years, right? So that's the whole idea, is, like, we don't just look at the end of the life, but we look at the beginning, and it will affect everything. Like, it affects how you design the product, it affects the raw material that you source to design that product, it affects even within the manufacturing of, like, the packaging. So that's what I think the circular economy is more about. Like, the thing about the linear economy, like, what I feel like is happening today is more of, we're doing the linear economy, or, like, we're trying to green the linear economy, if that makes sense. We're
by compensating
we're only looking after, but the reality is, if we keep looking at the after point, we're never actually going to hit the goals, you know? Like, we have to be more proactive in terms of thinking, instead of just, like, oh, we're just going to reduce the impact. No, we have to be like actively seeking ways to keep improving and pushing forward instead of just wanting to reduce it.
Yeah, we have to like innovating. So what are some of the promising like innovations supporting this model that you see as a necessity in the near future?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll try to like, I learned a lot of things from class, like academically, but like, I feel like they're all applicable in real life. Like So for one, like, I don't know if you guys have heard of like biomimicry. So the whole concept is like it's pretty much having to use nature as an inspiration for design, you know, like a perfect example is maybe like rugs. Okay, it sounds very funny. I bet you've never heard of like rugs and you're like, what the heck? Why is this girl talking about rugs on a podcast? But like there's this carpeting company in the States called Interface. Pretty much what they do is like, you know, when you sell carpet, the whole idea is like you have to like stick them with glue onto the floor, and then the whole process of sticking them and removing them creates so much waste. It has so many chemicals. Yeah. What they did was like they learned from like nature, like there's a certain way to attach them, or like there's a certain like sticky material or tape that you can use to attach them more efficiently, that you only stick to the corners of the carpets, therefore completely eliminating the need for the glue, completely eliminating the need for the entire long process of the thing. And that was fully inspired by nature, you know, like just the way that they even like made the design, how close it was, or even along those lines. So that's biomimicry, but there are also a lot of other ways it could be in terms of the shape of buildings, you know, to make it more aerodynamic. Like there are lots of ways to be inspired by nature. But then another point would actually be like the functional economy. So what does that mean? The whole concept of that is like we measure how like people are I guess successful, not by how much they own, but by like, you know, by how little they own. It's a complete opposite of how our current economy works, right? Because like right now we're all like capitalistic in a way, you know, we want the newest gadget, we want newer clothes, blah, blah, blah. But the whole idea of a functional economy is like, maybe there are certain things that you don't own and you can just rent it or like lease it for a certain period of time. For example, a bike. I don't own a bike. If I'm going to travel between places, I would prefer to use a bike instead of a car just because it requires less energy. But using a bike, like I don't have one, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't have access to it. You know, like the whole functional economy has that idea of like giving access or making certain things more accessible. Maybe a bike is too simple. Another example is like a washing machine. Some households don't own one, but a washing machine service is exactly that. It's a functional economy because a person doesn't need to own it, but can still have access to the service and will only pay for whatever amount of time they need with the service, you know. Mm-hmm. In essence, it's not owned by the person, it's owned by the company, and therefore a company will think, I want to maintain like the level of quality of this product or this machine as long as I can in its lifespan, because if I do, it's less expense for me. So like that's the whole idea of a functional economy. And I guess maybe the last idea I had was more like integrating tech with a circular economy. Like I said, bringing in partners and working with different institutions and organizations, like one man's trash can be another man's treasure, is totally true. And the perfect example of that is like right now I use this app, it's called Too Good To Go. And I don't know if you've heard it, it's a pretty simple app. All it does is it connects restaurants that are about to throw out food that is perfectly edible to eat. And they sell it at a cheaper price to consumers, and they do so through a platform. Like that's the concept. It's so simple, but you can pretty much, like I buy, let's say typical meal would cost 12 euros. I can buy it at 1/3 the price, and it's just as good as new. Like it would have been thrown otherwise. And like it's a very simple concept, but it works. And a lot of people love it here too. So I don't know. I spoke a lot. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, the app and integrating waste management in an app setting would really help maximize the value of the waste. I was just wondering if performance economy is similar to functional economy.
Yeah, I think it is. Like I'd say performance would fall as like an example under the functional economy.
Because it's
like
service over product, right?
Exactly. It's servicizing. That's the whole concept, right? Like you can either have like access, so like whenever you need it, then you get it. Or it could be like a performance economy, which is like, let's say a company can rent lighting, or they can rent a printer, or they can rent mm-hmm. medical machines for their hospital for 15 years. And like they lease it. And in essence, then that company will care really, they'll care a lot about the machines, like I said, because they don't want it to die quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, they want it to last as long as possible because it's cheaper for them if they're able to extend its lifespan. And then after those 15 years are done, that company can get those machines again and see what in those machines work again, or what they will throw out, like what actually goes to waste. Like they can actually refurbish it along those lines. So it's super cool. Like, I think it's not possible for all products. Like, exactly, like it's, you cannot use it for phones, for example. Like, I think a phone is something everyone needs. It's hard to lease that.
Yeah. But
for the bigger things in life that most people don't have access to, like a car, a washing machine, or for a B2B perspective, an elevator, lighting, like these are things mm-hmm. that can all be servicized. They don't need to be owned if you think about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Makes sense. I learned about biomimicry in my online course on solid waste management. Circular economy schools of thought. Our solutions are in nature. Yay.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah, so with the circular economy, you were mentioning that it's about starting it from its development. What part of the waste industry do you think is most developed, underrated, or most difficult to develop?
I feel like... nice question, but I feel like it's hard to identify that. Like, I think when it comes to waste, I like just like distinguishing it in terms of how much, like what kind of waste it is, right? Like, I think it's really developing, moving forward in the food industry, which is really good because that's a waste that has a really quick turnover, you know? Once you have waste, they're just thrown out. But the good thing there is like, I mean, the thing about the food industry is it is compostable anyway. So like if it was going to be thrown out, it doesn't necessarily to be burned, etc. So I think that is definitely something that is moving forward. Like I said, the example of Too Good To Go, or another example there is like I order from this company called Ornon, which is like without standards. And the whole idea is that they get like produce from farmers, and these are produce that they're not beautiful, they're not perfect. A supermarket wouldn't get it. And so they'd just be thrown out. But instead, what they do is they sell it in a subscription basis. They're all organic products, and they deliver it to different households who order. So like you already eliminate waste in that way. So I think the food industry is moving forward drastically, at least in Europe. But in terms of what is underrated, is I think anything that has to do with waste that is not usable, like not compostable, not biodegradable, not even recyclable, you know, like for me, it's plastic. Like plastic, I can't stand it. I mean, yeah. I understand the hygiene. I understand the need for it, the convenience.
Yeah.
But we lived 60, 70 years without plastic, you know, like there has to be a way to turn around, like turn back and figure it out. And I mean, the good thing is a lot of the places I go to here, the plastics are bigger, or like they have good recycling collection systems.
So long sachet.
Yeah, and they don't have, like, that's the thing. Like, if your plastic is small, there's no way to salvage that. So,
yeah.
Like, it's good to see that here, fine, it's still underdeveloped, but there are movements, like, there are things moving it forward. But at the same time, it's like, in my head, I can't help but think, who is going to think of the solution for, like, sachets? Who's going to think of a solution for things that are done in developing countries, right? I don't think the people here relate to that. It's so hard to think about like what's happening in that side of the world when you're so stuck in your own bubble in this side of the world, you know? Like, it's just
We recently discovered that a lot of people don't even know, especially, well, not in the Philippines, but a lot of people in the US and other first world countries don't even know what a sachet is, because the idea of something so small and single use doesn't make sense. But I think that's where the disconnect between economic disparity comes into play, like in the Philippines, and people in India my friends in India do know why sachets have to be used, because of the economic factors being considered, like how they have to live on a day-to-day basis because of income.
Mm-hmm.
But in the US, like tiny travel size products are because of convenience or because of functionality, not because of monetary price. Or
Exactly. Yeah. Not
because those people have a choice, right? Like they have a choice to do it versus in the Philippines or in other developing countries, you don't have a choice. You just get it because you have to. So understandable, understandable.
What are the most difficult types of ways to repurpose? Like aside from, you know, the typical or top of mind or maybe like would be medical waste, e-waste, of course, our enemy, the styrofoam. But what else? What else would you consider difficult?
I would really like. I mean, it is already known, but like for me, it's the e-waste, just because technology is booming like crazy, right? And there's sort of like this, like there's this behavior of like a planned obsolescence, where like we just want to get the new thing, even if what we currently have is not like dead or doesn't work anymore. Like every 2 years, okay, guys, how often do we get a phone? I bet every 2 years, you get a new phone, right? Like without us realizing it, we just want the next phone. And that's just like a consumer behavioral psychological thing. But yeah, like for me, e-waste is definitely the hardest thing. And if you think about it, like even here, like there are barely any plans on or like ways to really combat it. If anything, what we see people do is they collect it, like the producer collects it, and then sees what they can refurbish in it or what are the parts of it that you can use again in another product, like what is missing, and connect the puzzle pieces and then resell it at a cheaper price. So e-waste even here is only being resold to that extent. If not resold, then they're brought into landfills or like, I don't know, they're sent in, I'm sure we've all heard like they're sent to developing countries that where people just sift through them to find metal, and it's very dangerous working conditions, right? So I think that is definitely the most important waste right now that has to be looked upon. And like, I don't know, even if I think about it back home, like all my old chargers, like and stuff, my phone, I'm just like, what did I do with it? I think it's just in my what do you call it?
Drawer. Yeah, in a little drawer, probably.
Just because there's nothing better to do with it currently, right? Like,
yeah. I think I still have my Tamagotchi somewhere here, you know?
Yeah, no, I think I have like a PSP somewhere in the house. I'm like, what do I do with now? You know?
And like, the types of waste, I mean, the materials are so complex. It's hard to separate them, you know? Like, especially just the simple wire. Like, the valuable parts there are the metal, but the metal's mixed. So you'll have to go through each one. Yeah. So recycling it will end up even more expensive than getting the raw material itself.
But I feel like that's a good like consumer perspective. But then of course, like on a business to business perspective, you'll also look at e-waste, you know, machines, etc. But it's also like, I'm sure we've all watched Seaspiracy. Mixed reviews, mixed opinions, fine, then like, but we can't help but think about like the impacts within industries that they just use on a regular basis, like fishing nets. You don't think about it. We don't directly impact it, but that's also waste, and there's nothing really being done for them. So just along those lines of thinking.
Yeah, I was bothered also by the fishing nets in the documentary.
So what policies do you think we will get, like, more industry, cities, and countries to support the circular economy model fully? Because I feel like it's time for us to finally, like, switch our views or switch our perspective to, like, this type model or thinking.
I think so. Okay, first, like, full transparency, we haven't had the class on like governance, policy, and sustainability, like that's next term. But then we have talked a little bit about like tariffs or even just like regulations, etc. At least here, like that whole idea of food waste, what helped combat it was France made a law which is called like the Loi Pacte, and the whole idea is that they're going to penalize companies that if they have too much food waste, like if you have a certain amount of food waste for the like a percentage of food waste for the size of your company, they'll penalize you. So you'd either have to donate the food or like donate the produce to a company, or you go on platforms like Too Good To Go, Phoenix, etc. Like that really worked here, like because it's, I think the good thing there is it's not like a tax, you know, like a tax is a limited thing. You say, I'm taxing you for this and I'm taxing you each year. That's good. Or like, if it's a ceiling, it's also like, it's not sort of fair. Like if you just put a ceiling on all of these different companies and some companies are bigger than others, you know, or some companies are making more impact than others. So I think the whole idea of the pact, like the Loi Pact, that regulation of like penalizing based on percentage makes more sense. But yeah, I think we just have to keep be aware as well. Like for some companies, paying a tax doesn't mean anything. Like it's so easy to do, you know, they could pay for it easily. Like, I mean, let's say the controversial companies like oil, energy, etc., all of those, like they just pay the tax, they don't mind it. But yeah, like I think things like those, like if we had to think of a small scale, like SMEs, like small and medium-sized enterprises, if you have policies even for them, policies for the big companies that are in relation to size and percentage based, I think that would, those are policies that would work. But maybe I'll get back to you in 3 months when I'm done with my class and I have better answers to share.
Yeah, looking forward to you actually learning about that, because it can't, the burden can't just be on the consumer, it must also be regulated.
Yeah.
Or even more so on the regulations than the consumer.
Yes, definitely. But I mean, now that we're here to having this podcast and inspiring people, of course we can't just go on and open a business and just make big changes. So how do you think we can motivate people to think more about waste?
I would say something simple. I keep track of I like to keep track of how many days it takes to get my own trash in the house full. Like my garbage bin, I like keeping track of how many days it takes. So right now our household is averaging 5 days, which is not a good thing. I'd love to extend it to a week or two. But think about just think about how much of that waste could be composted, how much of that waste could actually be recycled, etc. Like I know in the Philippines we don't have a lot of those systems in place, but doing that little thing of literally just choosing to throw on the left, which are the compostable or biodegradable stuff, and segregating the stuff that are recyclable is huge, right? Like we don't realize it, but I don't think people in the industry will take the extra effort just to segregate that, you know, to just do that, because it would be an extra cost. And for us people, like for consumers, it wouldn't be a cost. All you have to do is put it left, put it right. Like that's a way for me, I think, to really think about realize how much waste you're producing, I guess. And then another is just thinking about, you know, like Marie Kondo your life. No, I'm kidding. But in reality, I have nothing against that. But it's just thinking about how much you really need. Like before, personally, I love shopping, especially when I was back in the Philippines. It's so easy to shop on Shopee and stuff like that. It's so cheap. But then now, when you go into a country that maybe things are not as cheap, you really think about what you need and what you don't need. And before, what I do.
You're living alone.
Yeah, I live alone. I live in a flatmate, but so I don't really try to buy anything. Yeah. But what I do is if I'm about to shop, I put it in my cart and then I wait 3 days before I decide. And if I forget it, then I'm it's not important, right? Okay, that's not important. If I forgot it after 3 days, then it's not worth my time. But if I am still thinking about it, okay, fine, I'll buy it.
that mindset really saved me a lot of money and made me feel happier about 100%. My purchases.
Or even when you're in a physical store, if you have the luxury of being able to kill that, think about it longer and not impulsively shop and just think, I think even on a personal basis, not necessarily a sustainable one, is that if you don't absolutely love it when you see it, then you're not really going to use it. So adapt that mindset with other things you buy too. If you really need it, then get it. But if not, because sometimes, my friend said, are you in love with the item or the price?
Are you really getting it because that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
are you getting sense. It because, you know, when you, and even when it's more so when it's a sale and you see.
So true.
You buy something because, I'm buying it because it's only, I don't know, $20 or.
Yeah,
I mean, what a pesos.
Yeah, I totally agree 100%. And I think me moving here, a good challenge, even if let's say people are not moving, is what are you gonna put in your suitcase if you were gonna move tomorrow? What are the essentials? And then you realize everything else is actually not necessary. This is life now. So I don't know. I totally agree with you. It's a fair point. Are you looking for do you want the price or do you want the item itself? And that's the whole concept, the planned obsolescence thing. Maybe I should get another denim jacket, but I already have one.
Yeah.
It's cheap, but it's funny.
But to wrap up our episode and relating back to, I think, all of the great advice that you gave us, we want to ask you on a more personal level how you think we can turn this world around.
Oh, that's so, wow. That actually, when you say we, do you mean like us as consumers or like us as our generation or like what is it like?
However you want to interpret it.
We like to ask each
make
of
it a
guests.
Poetic thing for you. Yeah.
Yeah, we like to ask each of our guests this because our intention with the podcast was really to, one, raise awareness and educate more people about the environmental and social issues that our society faces, but also end on a note where they feel like they can take action on it on an individual basis and leave them feeling more hopeful than dreadful about what's happening.
That's a good, yeah, I totally for the hopeful note at the end. No, I think, honestly speaking, it's just thinking about sustainability itself is not something that is, it's not an industry, like it's not a specialization. It's cross-cultural, it's cross-sectoral, it's cross-everything. So in whatever field that you're working on, whether it be banking, whether it be construction or FMCG, there is always going to be a link back to it because this is our generation and the world on the line, right? So I want us to realize that there are so many resources like this podcast, like books that are out there that, you know, you give yourself 20 minutes of a day of learning, like just give it 20 minutes to stimulate your brain to think about sustainability and to think about something beyond yourself. And that's already a good way to move forward because you're educating yourself and making yourself aware. You know, I mean, I'm not for call out culture or anything like that. I'm really just more for an open mind kind of thing, you know, like as long as you keep yourself informed and not let that knowledge just stay as intent, but turn it into action is another thing, right? So one is like keeping yourself knowledgeable, making sure that you're aware of like what ways are there to help sustainability or how can you integrate sustainability into your own life, whether it be in your career, your personal life, etc. But the other thing is like actually acting on it. Like for me, I think I got lucky being able to act on it by pursuing a master's in it. But there's no one way to do it. You could shift career. It's never too late, right? Like I think that's what people also have to realize. Like I've met some people, they shifted from banking to sustainability and they're 40 years old, you know? Like it's possible.
Amazing.
Because it's just all about the intent and the motivation behind you to do it. And let's just say that the world is waiting for you too, because no one else is gonna fight for it. So gotta do our share.
Thespian at heart. I am moved. I am truly moved.
Oh.
And there we have it. We have Dana Xianghyo on with our Circle of Life and the Economy.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you so much for being on. This was amazing. We loved learning more about, especially how you were able to integrate both the mindset coming from the Philippines and now being a student and learning from like first world practices that hopefully we can adopt in the Philippines later on.
And so many quotable quotes you mentioned. I'm gonna
wow.
Inspired and moved.
Okay. I never thought of it that way. I don't know. It's like I said, like being a student is so much fun, right? Like it's all like these next 2 years for me is just all about learning. But guys, you know, I have a thesis that I have to write soon. I do plan to make it about the Philippines and wanted to connect it to waste, maybe like the EPR, enhanced product responsibility, or something along those lines. So let's see if you guys have ideas, we can totally chat about it. Cool. I'd love to do any topic that's really relevant back home.
Yes.
Any shout outs that you want to do before we end the episode, if you want to promote anything, feel free, this is your platform.
Cool. I guess for me, I just want to shout out to Oikos Berlin. Like that's a student society that I'm quite active in now, and the whole idea is the same thing. It's like mainstreaming sustainability, and we do different online events that bring in experts from different fields. They could already be sustainability experts or they could be data scientists that are working in the field of sustainability, etc. Like it really just varies, you know, depending on the theme. And each month we focus on a different theme. Like Carrie attended one, it was all about plastic waste, where we brought in the creator or like the CEO of the Plastic Flamingo. I don't know if you guys have heard about it.
Yes.
So really good. Yes, exactly. So we had him over in one of our events. And then another event, we did like waste. So it was actually the creator of like Ohnom, which is a company I was talking about, etc. earlier. And yeah, so we have a lot of online events, and I think it's always just good to keep yourself aware. Like there's so many events, you know, everywhere. And Orcus Berlin also helps bring those in. And I guess, of course, I can't help but mention Gcash Forest.
Yeah, keep it to your roots.
Is it? Yep, yep. Keep it to your roots. Of course, if you are on Gcash or like you're in the Philippines and you have an account, like use Gcash Forest. There's really no reason. There's no barrier stopping you from using it. So,
well, we'll tag both of the organizations on our Instagram page just so people can link out to either of them and then also learn more about it.
Yeah, I thought of one more thing. Sorry, really quick.
Yeah,
so anyone who also wants to get into the field of sustainability, I think there's this organization now or association in the Philippines called Society of Sustainability Practitioners. Like, it's super new, but the whole idea is to bring to light jobs in sustainability. So anyone who wants to do a career in it can also focus on that. It could be workshops, it could be a career fair, just building a network. So that's something I'd like a shout out to as well. Thank you.
Much, Dana, for doing this and joining our podcast. We're Earth Friends and the Earth is our friend. We'll catch you guys on our next episode.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.